We're all.
I'll go get one.
Yeah.
You don't know how lucky you are.
No, I'll mention it and I'll let you do it because I got a couple of things. Oh, so enough.
Yes. Another day on the right side of the graph.
Right.
Yeah. How supplemental.
Okay. Good morning, and welcome to our June 12th meeting. Very busy with summer breaks coming up and graduations, and everyone's going wild. And for our guests, I normally have a little personal story to tell, so bear with me. I really didn't have much to think about this weekend other than reading our packet and working and trying to keep pumps and water going. And then Monday I had to go to the oral surgeon for a visit. And it's kind of been a tough female week for me. So she walks in and tells me, "Oh, hi, Mr. Muller." And I'm like, "Uh-oh, I'm in trouble." And she goes, "I don't know if you remember me, but," she said, "I was in your daughter's class in school, and you used to give an after-school summer break party at the farm for all of us little kids, and great memories." And she said, "Got good, fond memories." So she says, "Open up." So I opened up, and she backed off, and she said, "Well, got good news and bad news." And I go, "Okay, give me the bad news first. The bad news is you have a fracture, and we're going to have to pull it and do an implant and a stud and this and that." And long story short, I said, "Okay, give me the good news." She said, "The good news is I'm not going to give you a physical." So I was very, very, very happy to hear that one. So continuing on with my female week, I get home that afternoon and the granddaughter was over. And doctors are getting younger and we're getting older. That's the problem. And granddaughter was all excited that Papa was going to lose a tooth. And she just lost some. And she says, "Papa, just think the good fairy's going to bring you some money." And I said, "Well, I hope he brings me $5,000 for this damn tooth I've got to fix." So continuing on with the abuse, it's our wedding anniversary Friday after 44 years with Miss Ida. And she said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "Well, I got to pick up a pump. And Salinas, you want to take a ride down the coast and we'll get a burrito on the way home?" She goes, "I was kind of hoping to go to the Ritz for lunch." And I go, "Well, we need water first." So it was a tough week on the farm. But we're here today and we can handle it. And so congratulations to all the families that have graduates and potential graduates and wherever they are, whether it's daycare or college.
A burrito. Your romantic instincts are flawed.
That's right. I got a tough week. So roll call, please.
Board member Alvarez.
Here.
Board member Kissinger.
Here.
Board member McGrath.
Here.
Vice Chair Young.
Here.
Chair Muller.
Here. Thank you. And we're privileged today to have so much state representation. It looks like we're being double-teamed. If we had one more, it'd probably be a Brown Act violation here. But so I believe seniority and the pecking order goes to Board Member Tam first from the State Board, and Board Member Moore, we'll even give you an opportunity to say a couple minutes, and we'll put the gavel down.
Good morning. Just a strong showing of support for the San Francisco Bay Regional Water Board by the State Water Board. And also a lack of coordination on two board members' part, but never mind that. I see now, though, that I'm going to have to twist Stephen's arm a little bit harder. He misses you guys so much that, you know, he just cannot stay away. But thank you. I did manage to beat traffic and got here just in time. Wanted to briefly get you up to date on a couple things. As you know, the legislature is frantically going through its various bills, and some of which we were tracking as our priority one bills have fallen by the wayside, and some of which are still continuing to move forward. One very noteworthy bill that is actually being heard today in Senate Committee on Environmental Quality is AB 145, the bill that proposes to transfer the drinking water program from the Department of Public Health over to the State Water Board. That bill did pass the Assembly, and so now it is in the Senate, and we'll see what happens there. Of interest to you might be, well, actually, I should say that personally, I'm not speaking on behalf of the administration, I'm somewhat of a neutral mind on this matter. I see advantages and benefits to be realized in the long term, and I see some challenges in the short term with such a transfer. But I have to tell you that personally I was a bit offended at some of the arguments raised by the water agencies that are opposing this transfer. In particular, the one argument they raised, which I find particularly offensive, was the argument that because public health is not in our name, we don't have the expertise, the experience to deal with public health issue, which, of course, you all know is ludicrous. And so at the request of Senator Jerry Hill, Tom Howard did send a letter yesterday responding to those criticism that were raised. I think it's an excellent response. And if you'd like to see a copy, I'll make sure that Bruce, please get a hold of Rob Eagle, and he'll share that with you. I think it does a really good job of explaining the Water Board's activities and, yes, our public health concerns when we deal with the various matters that come before us. But that bill is still moving through the legislature, and we'll see where that ends up and what action a governor might take on it if it lands on his desk. A bill that did not make it through, but I think has great potential, so I wanted to make you aware of it. It's AB 1251. It was an interesting bill. It proposed to, and it's actually dead. It did not make it out of the Assembly. I believe it was held up in appropriations. But the bill would direct the Secretary of the California Environmental Protection Agency to convene an interagency task force to develop a holistic approach to dealing with stormwater, integrating source reduction, land use planning, transportation, and of course our water quality control efforts into an integrated, holistic stormwater regulatory management approach. I certainly support that concept. I'm not sure how a task force would get us there. But in any case, the bill has stalled, though I've been told that the sponsors and actually the supporters of the bill are still very, very determined to carry this idea forward. And like I said, in theory, I like the concept. I want us to explore it. And certainly as state board and regional board staff through the various roundtable work on stormwater issues, and as we hopefully wrap up the industrial general stormwater permit at the state board level, I would hope that our next step would be to gather, through either the roundtable, or some other, kind of setting, a group together to discuss that topic and incorporate it into a stormwater strategic plan or work plan, so that as we look at the next cycle of stormwater permits, we have a good integrated approach in mind of how to deal with this on a long-term basis and not just a permit-by-permit basis. So I think it's a great concept. Again, I wasn't sure about the task force approach that was proposed by the bill, but there's a great deal of interest and support, and it's certainly an idea that I think we should be exploring further and see where we can take with it. And then finally, I just wanted to give you an update that at the next board meeting, the State Water Board will be getting a report from the four stakeholder groups that we formed to look at the issue of cost of compliance. And the work groups that is most advanced in their effort is the NPDS, Wastewater Work Group. And so they have prepared some preliminary recommendations. I know that they've had some discussion with staff, including your AEO, Tom Mumley, and they're fine-tuning it. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this. I'm personally very committed to exploring those recommendations, where they make sense, do not threaten or hamper our water quality protection effort, but yet still yield a result in terms of reducing compliance costs. I think, you know, we have an obligation to explore that, especially since I'm told the State Water Board will be considering fee increases this year. Personally, my goal, and I have to twist some arms on the State Water Board in order to accomplish this, but I would like to see that if the State Board is going to be raising fees, and that, you know, will be staff's proposal, I would like to see us make a commitment to implement those recommendations to reduce the cost of compliance by an equivalent, if not higher, level to match the fee increases that we'll be considering. That's just a notion. We'll see what happens. But I'm very excited. These groups have spent quite a bit of time and effort into developing these recommendations. And thanks to Tom Munley of your staff, who spent some time helping them, giving them feedback. So I'm looking forward to hearing what came out of that and seeing where we go with it.
Thank you, Tam. I'm sorry those freshwater people weren't nice to you.
I'm sorry, those what?
The drinking water people.
Actually, it was both of us. I mean, don't you find it offensive, John, that the claim that we don't deal with public health issues? Hello?
Look at the packets we've been.
Yes.
I wonder if I could ask a question about the discussion about reducing compliance costs. First of all, I think it's a very interesting and timely subject, and hope that we all get the benefit of the ideas that are put forward, because I think we would also like to follow up on whatever is appropriate. But I was also going to ask you whether people are only targeting or focusing on costs of compliance, like monitoring and the regular programs, or if they're also considering sort of the indirect costs of compliance that might be caused by just an inefficient permitting system.
Actually, it's both.
Okay.
It's both. And I should also give you a heads up that in addition to these four working groups that we formed as part of the cost of compliance effort, if you remember we once had a board member at the state board named Jerry Secundi, who was our vice chair and who is now president and CEO of the, see if I can get the acronym right, Council, the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance, I believe it is, CEEB, yes. CEEB had also formed a water quality task force that's been working for a year to come up with their recommendations on how, you know, we might be more efficient, how might we might better prioritize activities, their recommendations, not necessarily documenting costs, but documenting, at least I've been encouraging them, to document or to evaluate and document the outcome of our regulatory activities to date, and looking at those outcome proposed recommendations for how they might be improved. They will also be presenting their report and recommendations on Tuesday. So with the wealth of information and recommendations that will be coming to us, both looking at costs, direct costs, as well as just program effectiveness, efficiency options, I'm actually very excited. I think hopefully, you know, out of all these recommendations, I would love for us to implement the ones that we believe are most meaningful and would result in more efficiencies and better outcome.
Thank you, Tim. Board Member Moore, to justify your mileage, you want to say a few words over here? Yep, come on down, State Board Member.
Tell us how hot it is in Sacramento today.
You gave this up?
I'm State Board Member Steve Moore. I just needed a little more training on how to do a good liaison report, so I came to watch Tam Doting give. So that's why I came. No, I was in Oakland for other reasons today, but there's also items on today's agenda that are of interest to me. But I wanted to say hello, and there's some new board members here. I used to sit behind that dais, and wanted to take the opportunity to welcome you to the regional board here. And it's I can't show any favoritism, so it's one of the best regional boards in the state. So just a good morning to you all, and don't have much to add other than this year on budget issues. For some reason, the water boards seem to be doing pretty well. We weren't real aggressive, let's say, in terms of what we were requesting. We were then handed more resources, potentially, in terms of the draft budget. So perhaps we're doing something right, you know, in terms of trying to be an attentive, responsive, responsible agency overall with the regions and the state. In terms of integrity, what was it? Felicia Marcus had something nice to say to all staff meeting this week. It was, we really represent integrity, creativity, flexibility, and engagement, right? And then on top of those concepts, commitment, you know, a real follow-through. And I think that goes from line staff all the way up to the different regional boards, and I humbly would say the state board members and executive leadership. So I thought that was inspiring from Felicia, our new chair, and just want to thank you for your service, and maybe we'll have a chance to catch up a little after the meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. Good seeing you. Okay, moving on with the agenda here. We do not have any introductions. Is that correct, staff?
No introductions this month. I will also note that Tamron Austin, our other attorney besides Yuri, is not here today. So Yuri will be advising us as appropriate on all matters.
With full confidence, Yuri. Thank you for taking dual roles today. I do not have a public forum card at this time, and if any other interested parties wish to speak, you're welcome to fill out a card out front and hand it in to staff, and we'll get you on here. So at this time, we'll move on to item three, the minutes, and we have four sets of minutes, and as I understand it from our legal counsel, we can approve it on one motion and one vote. And for individuals that I've often thought about this, because even at the city now, we are not doing the recuse thing if you missed a meeting. So we don't have to do that any longer if there's a meeting that's missed. Correct, legal team?
Correct. The advice has evolved somewhat so that even if you are not present at the meeting, you may vote on the minutes.
Very good. Thank you. So we'll go ahead and have a motion, please, to accept
approval of the four sets of minutes.
Second.
It's moved and second. Any further discussion? Yes, changes?
No changes, but I just wanted to compliment the staff on putting together these minutes. I thought they were exactly right in terms of the amount of detail and the discussion of the issues that were presented. It was really very, very nicely done, and I think it's a great benefit to do this work and provide another avenue for members of the public and even, you know, board members to recall what went on at the meetings other than having to listen through an audio tape that doesn't actually fast forward and can't get you where you want to go very quickly. So nice job. I hope we can use this as a template for future. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our goal. In fact, the minutes are evolving right now, right here.
Good job, Diane. So motion moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So ordered, majority. We will move on to board member and executive officer's report. I will make mine very briefly. On May 21st, I attended a meeting here at the office along with the vice chair, and I just want to she will give the details on it, but I want to thank staff for all the great work they did that day. We had a good full capacity in the board meeting room and with our Napa County officials and industry groups, and it really was quite a first time I think we've done this. And so Vice Chair, would you like to give a report on that, please?
Yes, we had, I would say, more than a dozen folks from the Napa area, and I'm not going to list them all. If anyone's interested in the particular people who were in attendance, we do have a list, and the staff can make that available. Generally, it was included wine grape growers, the agricultural commissioner, people from the Napa RCD. So it was a cross-section of everyone who deals with these kinds of issues in Napa. And I think the bottom line of the meeting was that we discovered or reiterated that many of the goals that we have been trying to reach as a regional board are the same goals that these folks share. We want a measurable improvement in water quality in an appropriate time frame. We don't want to duplicate existing programs, some of which are very, very good on the ground already in Napa. And we do want to provide alternative compliance mechanisms like third-party certification when it's appropriate. So many of the issues that they had concerns about were interpreting how it was that we were all trying to get to those goals. And I think after discussing it, we all felt that we were a lot closer than everybody had assumed that we were. There were several, or actually a few other issues where substantively our initial plan out of the gate maybe either caused confusion or caused some concerns among the growers particularly, and those were the treatment of rural lands, and that's code for the part of your property that isn't planted in grapes. And roads and our use of the most recent data. These, we thought, were solvable problems. We appreciated their input, and I think we'll be able to work to clarify all of that in the next thing, whatever it is, that we put out on this issue. So I think that was we went for 3 hours with 20 people in the room, so I'll let Bruce add to that, or Diane, if you wish, at the whatever you think is the appropriate time. But I do have a couple of other things.
Okay. We'll let
continue
you
on, Vice Chair.
All right. I did want to bring everyone's attention to the series of reports, but the most recent of which appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on Monday, June 10th. Called Trails of Trash Found Under the Sea, talking about all the plastic bags and other things that are found off the coast of Monterey, which will in some way, I hope, inform our decisions on trash in the future in our stormwater permit. Last thing was that I had the opportunity to have a meeting and dinner with, I'm going to mess this up, Jie Li, who is the director of, take a deep breath, Legislative Affairs Office of the State Council of the People's Republic of China in the Department of Coordination on Government Legal Affairs, parentheses, this is all on the card, parentheses, Department of Regulations Codification, comma, Department of Filing and Review of Local Regulations and Rules, and parentheses, that's her title.
What's the acronym?
I'm not sure. She is a delightful person and was very interested in hearing about how we regulate water quality and how we have been able to navigate the issue of going from where we once were to where we are now. And I tried to pick up on the diplomatic finesse that Mr. Kissinger described last month that our governor had when he was meeting with the officials of China, telling them that, yes, we started out with a serious problem, but through a lot of hard work and very good organizational skills, we're making progress. Anyway, it was a good meeting, and I was quite proud to be able to describe the things we do here.
Thank you, Vice Chair. You want to comment on your report? We'll clear up here first on the last one. How's that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a couple things.
No, I'll let you after we finish here. That way you can. Board Member Kissinger.
Nothing for me.
Board Member Abacobi.
Just a brief mention. I had the opportunity to tour the Palo Alto wastewater treatment plant, which Mountain View is a part of, and it's my first tour, and was quite impressed with the immensity of everything, but. One thing that came up, we talked a lot about actually just staffing issues. And as you know, many of our municipalities have been challenged with budget issues. And fortunately, the Palo Alto treatment plant is doing well. But You may have read in the city of San Jose, a much larger city than ours, but has had some major budget issues the last few years and continues to deal with that. And the issue of like employees and cuts in employee salaries and pensions. And it was mentioned that they are currently 40% vacant in terms of their staffing. And just something that I, you know, made me think about the criticalness or the importance of this issue, you know, of water quality and how we as cities play a big role and something like just, you know, our city employees and a lot of these treatment plant employees, our city employees, are tied into all of that and the challenges that cities we all face right now and how that affects these other issues, the bigger issues, is came really kind of drove home to me. So just wanted to mention that.
Thank you. That's one of the privileges we have at this board is to visit wastewater treatment plants. So it's quite a eye-opening experience, mm-hmm. to say the least. So thank you.
Depends on how well it's run.
That's right.
Nothing.
Ours is well run. Yeah.
No comments. That's right. There's always a little odor issue. So. If it's a good one, right?
Yeah.
So board member, I'm sorry, executive officer and assistant executive officers, if you'd like to report out a little bit.
A couple items. I'll use what Margaret commented on as point of departure. We did have our in-house training in May as our annual field trip, which I want to give a thanks to San Francisco PUC for hosting us at their new headquarters and giving us not only a walkthrough of all the features, the sustainability features at their building, but then having an opportunity to see a couple of low-impact development projects that are underway in San Francisco. And we finished up with a tour of the Oceanside Wastewater Treatment Plant, which is actually special in a number of ways, most significantly that most of it is essentially underground. It's right next to the San Francisco Zoo, and I would bet that nobody who visits the zoo really is aware that there's essentially in some spots they're right on top of the wastewater treatment plant. And so it was also an eye-opener and in some cases a nose-opener for some of our staff who don't have background in wastewater treatment. And I think this gets a little bit to what Margaret was pointing out, that it's not only some of the budgeting is causing lack of staff, but there was definitely in the 80s and 90s sort of a gap in training in wastewater treatment. I came out of wastewater treatment. That was my master's back in the 70s, but there was a lot of effort on cleanup, and so a lot of the water quality emphasis in the 80s and 90s was more on groundwater cleanup and that technology than wastewater technology. And I even recently spoke to the head of the my department at Stanford saying, yeah, we to a certain degree we lost a generation and we're just getting it back. And so some of the staffing challenge is the lack of folks who are actually trained. Many are retiring now, and there's a bit of a gap. But thankfully there is a strong program at the universities. There's increased emphasis not only in wastewater treatment, but how to tie that into sustainability and the broader issue of integrated regional water management. And so I think there is some optimism. I did have a chance to participate in the program that we periodically reported to you on that Stanford and Cal are heading up, the Renew It program, reinventing the nation's urban water infrastructure. And it was their annual meeting at the end of May, and I'll report next month a little bit further on that. But it does give some sense of optimism for the future on that. A couple of other items to touch on. One, just this past week, the state auditor's office released a report as a result of about a year or so of effort to review statewide the water quality certification program. And while they didn't directly review our region, they reviewed the program at the State Board, North Coast, Central Valley, and San Diego boards. And it was initiated by concerns from Caltrans over their involvement in the water quality certification program. The auditor found that some of Caltrans' concerns weren't necessarily fully valid, but it did raise a number of concerns that spelling out that there was a sense that there needs to be more consistent administration of the program statewide. And so as this moves forward, I'll report to you how this may impact us, but we don't disagree with the findings. In fact, if anything, many of the things reported are things that we've felt for many years, that we need to be more consistent in applications and tracking and enforcement. And it's something that we'll continue to push as that moves forward. I think in this month's report, it's worth noting that the implementation of the mercury and PCBs, TMDLs, specific to wastewater, is showing promise that there is noticeable reductions in mercury and PCBs in the loading, wastewater loadings. That's a positive. The problem remains that since these are legacy pollutants, that the historic levels still in bay sediments of mercury and PCBs still largely remains, but that we're reducing the amount of new sources of PCBs and mercury, and it's something that we can actually point to and measure. So I view that as an ongoing success story. One other item to highlight in this month's report is the update of the environmental screening levels that we use for our cleanup program. And I think we've benefited from having our own toxicologist, Uta Hamon Bloomberg, to review this. And Tam noted the concerns raised over our agency's abilities to protect public health, and I think it's key that when we have toxicologist involvement, it demonstrates that we have the technology. Unfortunately, some of the personnel folks still feel that why should the water boards have toxicologists available? Well, I think there's a direct connection there that we do need that expertise on board. I'll let Diane say a couple words on where we're going with the vineyard regulatory program on the heels of our meeting with the Napa vineyard group.
Good morning. This is Diane White. As I mentioned during our meeting, I actually don't have much to report on that except our plans to move forward to hire a staff to backfill Sandy Potter. So overall, June is going to be a busy month for us in the next 2 weeks because we have two technical positions we're interviewing for, two admin positions we're interviewing for, and a number of scientific aides to help us out over the summer. So we're hoping to get someone on board by the first week of July, and at that time we'll bring them up to speed and plan to go back and meet with the counties and the RCD specifically to discuss the roads issue that came up at that meeting and see if there's any other alternative approaches that we should consider. At that time, we'll also do some follow-up meetings with Sonoma County, who also has an interest in following up with us and possibly with board members to have a similar type of meeting. So I would say probably July, August is when we're going to really move back into action with a new staff person on hand and see what we can accomplish to keep us on track.
Thank you. At this time, yes, Vice Chair.
I wanted to take the opportunity to note something that's in the executive officer's report on the status of the municipal efforts to reduce trash loads, and it's particularly appropriate with Steve Moore being in the audience because he was part of the team that put this whole plan and program together and passed or approved the permit that set it into motion. briefly, as you'll recall, our overall goal on trash was to have a 10% reduction each year in the trash load that entered the state's waters from stormwater, and we would culminate in year 11 with a de minimis load. So basically, we're looking at trying to go to zero. And there were a couple of major components to that program, one of which was to have the municipalities implement an effective trash control program, and the second of which was to verify the required reductions in the field. Based on this latest report that we have in the executive officer's report and on the correspondence that I have been following back and forth between us and the permittees, I feel good about the fact that we seem to be making some progress on the first part, which is to have the cities implement good programs for controlling trash. One of the things that Dr. Mumley has been pushing for a long time is to have the permittees target the really high trash generation areas and choose whatever combination of control measures works for those areas, but do that. It's sort of like the old EPA mantra, you know, take the worst first. And that seems to be the direction that we are all going. The other thing that the staff has done is to make it clear that when we say get a program that works for the high trash generation areas, what we mean, the standard of performance is equivalent to full trash capture devices. And I like that because it's very clear about, you know, what the target is and what standard they have to measure up to. At the same time, it provides the cities with the option to do it however they want as long as they're that effective. So I think that's good news, you know, better late than never cut type of progress. Tom's smiling. On the second part, and who knows what's coming, on verifying the required reductions, it's really hard to tell from anything that has come my way as a board member that we've made any progress on that at all. And I'm sure Tom will have something to say, but I would like to make sure that the cities understand very clearly that what we want to have ultimately is, and not ultimately, as soon as possible, a monitoring program to measure the trash that goes from stormwater into the waters of the state, and we want the measurements to be done on the ground. We want that verification on the ground. We don't want it in a bunch of models. There's going to have to be some interpolation, some modeling. I'm realistic about that. But this can be done. You know, you can see trash with the naked eye. It's not like PCBs and mercury. And I know we have the expertise in this region to put a program like that together. You know, we have San Francisco Estuary Institute, for one, that runs at the rest of our regional monitoring program. So I'm getting on the soapbox, getting warmed up. But I really am disappointed that we have seen so little progress from the permittees over the course of this permit. And I don't think there is a barrier in the way of them being successful in doing this, and I would like to be able to see a whole lot more progress on that in the future. And one part of that, which I wanted to draw to the staff's attention, is I think making it very clear on our part what we expect. And I'll use as an example, and I'm sorry to do this to you, Tom, and the rest of the staff, but for example, in this report, we say that permittees will conduct, quote, assessment or accountability measurements to demonstrate and verify progress. That's so vague that it can sort of mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, and I think what we want to say from now on, we're going to have to, meeting the microphone, what we're going to have to say is, you guys have to go out and set up a monitoring program in the field, bring the results back, and that's how we're going to be judging this. I mean, the time for being diplomatic is, I think, long past. So, sorry about the soapbox here.
Board Member McGrath.
If I may echo that concern, particularly on monitoring, I'm not willing to let quest for perfection be the enemy of good, but I'm not going to make decisions based on vaporware. I mean, there really needs to be data.
Thank you, and I'm sure Vice Chair, Board Member Abacobi, and myself are very concerned and aware of this. We hear it at every council meeting we attend, and I'm sure our friends at San Francisco hear it too. All those unfunded mandates, but we're going to keep working at it to try to do it. And I know in our city we're trying to work with the individuals that don't have residencies, and it's tough because they don't have a place to really put all their trash, and they keep thinking they just throw it in the creek or wherever they're staying. And so that's a tough one. So we're all digging and scratching, and we're not going to be like Nevada and bring them to California, but, you know, maybe we could bring them to Nevada. So I
will note
move
that
on.
Last week while I was up in Ashland, Oregon, Oregon has had a bottle bill for many years, and when I go out for a run here, I usually end up picking up trash, predominantly recyclables. I didn't find much to pick up there. On the flip side, where I was staying, did not have curbside recycling, and so I ended up bringing my wine bottles back to California to recycle. So in some respects, I think have a better program.
We Bay Area folks are just so sensitive, aren't we, on all this stuff? Really, we try to do the right things. None of us are perfect, so continue to try to do the right things with some of our agenda items here, folks. We're going to move on to swearing in at this time. All relevant evidence that any person's desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, and third by public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witnesses by others will be allowed. Following completion of direct testimony by all persons, each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rule of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibit, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material will be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now rise, please, or raise their hand. Thank you. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
Very good. So we will move on to
Item 5 is the consideration of uncontested items. I know you have a card for 5B from the city. I have a card here for 5B from the council for the Rod and Gun Club. So I recommend that we hear that item. The staff member, Alan Friedman, who would give the presentation, is naturally at his son's graduation this morning, but does plan to come back for the presentation. So I recommend we remove 5B from the uncontested item calendar and hear that after 6. And so that would mean that the remaining item on the uncontested item calendar would be 5A, Radiation Detection Company.
Correct.
And there is, I'm not aware that you have any card for that, and there's no supplemental.
No, we're just on 6 then.
So I would recommend adoption of 5A.
Only at this time.
Right.
Move approval of 5A.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further comments or discussions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
So ordered. Then we will move on to item 6 on the agenda.
Yes, item 6 is consideration of adoption of site cleanup requirements for the Guadalupe Rubbish Disposal Company for the Guadalupe Mine. I would like Carrie Austin to give staff presentation. I will note while we're setting up that we do have a supplemental for this item that we'll describe during the presentation, but we'll pass that out to you as part of...
Sorry for the squeak.
So the supplemental while she's setting up will be described and then printed and handed out?
Yeah, we do have a printed version.
Oh, it's printed. Thank you. Oh, here it comes. That's how you do it.
Thank you.
Did they get a copy?
Of
the supplemental. Okay. Are we ready?
Well, we are, but the technology is still asleep.
Okay, there so we can handle that.
All right. Well, good morning, Chair Mueller and members of the board. My name is Carrie Austin. I'm an engineer in the planning division working on Mercury.
Thank you. Can everyone hear? All right. Are
is this
we okay,
good?
Recording
is
secretary?
This? Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Carrie.
This presentation covers the board's consideration of adoption of site cleanup requirements for the Guadalupe Mercury Mine. It's owned by Guadalupe Rubbish Disposal Company, a division of waste management. I will refer to them as the discharger. This property is located in the Guadalupe River watershed, the same watershed as for a Mercury TMDL that the board adopted in 2008. You can see from this map that the watershed is located in the southern part of our region. It's shown here as the area outlined in black, and we have indicated the location of the Guadalupe Mercury Mine. Here's a map of the Guadalupe River watershed in Santa Clara County. This relief makes it easy to see that the water flows down from the hills in the southern portion of the watershed through the city of San Jose, where it's urbanized and quite flat, out Alviso Slough, and into San Francisco Bay. Oh, and right past the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project. I think there's a little something on the agenda about this portion of the bay later today. The New Almaden Mining District is located on a lower ridge, so we've indicated it here. It ranks as the fifth most productive mercury mine in the world, contiguous to New Almaden. So over here on this left side, we have a reservoir up here. So we're on the Guadalupe Creek side, and then so it's Guadalupe Reservoir, Guadalupe Mine, and Guadalupe Creek that comes down to Guadalupe River. Mercury mining in this area began in the 1840s, expanded in the 1880s, and peaked in 1910. Mining picked up during World War II and then was sporadic until it ended in the 1970s. This area has native rock that's high in mercury. Mercury was produced by roasting the excavated rock in furnaces. The furnace wastes, called calcines, have particularly high concentrations of mercury. The order would address mercury mining waste associated with Guadalupe Mine, including piles of excavated waste rock and calcines. All this production took a large population of miners. There were whole towns at New Almaden and Guadalupe shown in the photo. So what you can see here in the lower left of the photo are buildings where a lot of processing took place, and then through the lower portion of the photo, we have Guadalupe Creek winding through it. And you can see piles of waste in the lower portion of the photograph. And then in the middle, what you're seeing is Guadalupe Creek actually downcutting through piles of waste and transporting them downstream. Even, yes?
Terry, the piles we see in the pictures are a combination of overburden and wastes. Do they include calcines in those piles we can see?
I believe that many of these wastes are calcines. It did get to the point where, you know, this mercury mine was deep underground, as New Almaden was the deepest underground mercury mine. It's very expensive to haul waste up to the surface, so they tried really hard to leave the non-economic material down below. As time went on, and not in here in 1883, there was a lot more dynamite and blasting, and then finally diesel equipment from World War II on, and that changed the makeup of the waste. So I'm giving you a general answer because
I don't know really exactly. Important. There could be a circumstance where you remove overburden, which is largely free of mercury waste. But that wasn't the circumstance.
Sadly, overburden is not free of mercury. Where we investigated that at the Gamonini Mercury Mine, it had an average of 300 milligrams per kilogram. So it's just that it's rock that's closer to the ore body, so it doesn't have economic levels of mercury. But it could have. It's not been roasted. So we think it presents a lesser threat to water, that it's just a little bit less soluble than the calcines that have been roasted.
Thank you.
My pleasure. But even today, decades after mining ended, mining waste is still piled along the banks of Guadalupe Creek and at many other locations in New Almaden. So here is how that mercury mining waste causes a toxic bioaccumulative problem. This diagram shows mining waste piled above a creek. This is not unlike what you saw last month with Leona Mine. However, there is no acid mine drainage at Guadalupe Mine. Stormwater erodes the mining waste and discharges it to the creek. Some accumulates in the creek and some washes downstream. In the aquatic environment, in low oxygen conditions, naturally occurring bacteria convert this inorganic mercury from mining waste and other sources to its more toxic form, methylmercury. Methylmercury bioaccumulates up the food web to high levels in fish that humans and wildlife eat. Fish in reservoirs in the Guadalupe Creek watershed have the highest methylmercury concentrations in California. There's a public health advisory on fish consumption in waters downstream of Guadalupe and New Almaden mines. One of two advisories in California that warns that no one should consume any fish from these waters. In 2008, you adopted the Guadalupe River Watershed Mercury TMDL to address impairment of waters by mercury. The problem the TMDL addresses is high levels of methylmercury in fish that humans and wildlife consume. Accordingly, the TMDL established targets, safe levels of methylmercury in fish for humans and wildlife. We calculated TMDLs and allocations for three areas: the upstream portion of the watershed, where mines, including the discharger site, are located; the downstream portions of creeks and the Guadalupe River, largely to protect the South Bay salt ponds in San Francisco Bay; reservoirs and lakes, because these waters in particular transform mercury into methylmercury, a form that's more dangerous to people and wildlife. An important focus of TMDL implementation is mine cleanups. To be effective, source control must be implemented throughout the watershed, including at the Guadalupe Mercury Mine. In this case, three entities own almost all of the mines in the watershed: the Santa Clara Valley, the Santa Clara County Parks Department, the Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District, and the discharger, Guadalupe Rubbish. All of them have completed or are completing cleanup work. County Parks owns almost all of New Almaden, and they started by tackling the five worst areas. So they own these huge processing yards, and those wastes have all been completely capped. And they have a few more projects underway. Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District owns a small portion of Guadalupe Mine, and their project is set for construction this summer. And Guadalupe Rubbish Disposal Company, the discharger today, is already into the design and permitting stage, and they've had some early implementation underway, which I'm going to show you. So you're considering a revised tentative order that would establish site cleanup requirements for Guadalupe Mercury Mine. The order would require the discharger to clean up mercury mining waste at the mine on property they own. The order is a standard next step in our usual cleanup oversight process, in that it follows from earlier orders for technical reports issued under Water Code 13267. Those earlier reports focus on investigation. However, Water Code Section 13267 cannot require implementation actions, so we typically use Section 13304 of the Water Code to establish site cleanup requirements. We use this approach to work with cooperative dischargers when a cleanup gets to the final investigation and implementation phase. The site cleanup would consist of the following steps. First, the discharger would complete their mapping of locations of mining waste at the mine. As noted in the revised tentative order, most of the mapping work already has been completed. Then, the discharger would characterize the mining waste for mercury concentration so that we can be sure the cleanup actions will be appropriately targeted to the threat posed by the waste. We expect cleanup actions to focus on stabilizing the waste in place using erosion control best management practices. However, in some cases, other actions such as removal may be appropriate. The discharger would then finalize designs and implement the accepted designs. Finally, the discharger would be responsible for monitoring the implemented control measures to ensure they are stable and effective over time. I'll now describe the mine site. Here's what Guadalupe Mine looked like in 1918. What's important to us now is the legacy pollution. So here in the lower left, you can see that these are piles. Well, these are piles of mining waste, and that's Guadalupe Creek. So they're piled against the bank there. Oh. We wanted to start there. Okay. This USGS map looks complex, but I'm showing it to convey a simple point. It shows that mining waste, including calcines, were discharged all along Guadalupe Creek, which is shown in blue along the lower portion of this map. And also, mining waste were discharged across the upland landscape as well. This is a portion of a larger map. It covers about 30 acres of the site. But we wanted to make this easier to see. So we've highlighted these piles of mining waste that the USGS identified in orange. So on the lower part here, you can see that the wastes are, in fact, piled along the creek, and they look to be sloping into it. And you can see the broad extent of wastes away from the creek as well. The Guadalupe mine does not look exactly like this now, but significant deposits of mining waste remain. We inspected the mine in 2007. I have a couple of example photos the discharger provided. Here's one example of mining waste eroding above Guadalupe Creek, the same area shown on that 1940s USGS map. So what you can see along the bottom of the photo here is Guadalupe Creek. You can almost see the reflection of the hill slope. And then on the upper left, I have outlined in a cloud shape here where this is eroding unvegetated mercury mining waste, and the discharger has put up caution tape because they're just about to start some work here. And they've, in response to our inspection, moved ahead with some interim actions. So here's one example at another area along Guadalupe Creek. On the left photo, we're looking up to a steep raveling slope of mining waste. On the right, we're looking down at that same slope towards Guadalupe Creek, but after the discharger took interim erosion control actions. So what you can see here is that this is coconut fiber matting that's been rolled over the site. And unfortunately, in this dark room, it's a little hard to make out, but that yellow line there are the straw wattles that they have staked into place. These are interim erosion control measures. Under the revised tentative order, the discharger would implement more permanent erosion control measures. As I noted earlier, in some cases, other actions such as removal may be appropriate. During the public comment period, we received comments only from the discharger. They submitted two letters, one from their attorney and one from their consulting engineer. The discharger had expressed that they felt singled out for enforcement. That's not the case. We'd like to emphasize here that the use of Water Code Section 13304 is never intended to be punitive. Rather, we're intending to set a clear path to move forward and ensure the mine site is cleaned up. Further cleanup work has been completed on other mine sites. Some work was completed under grants, where we provide oversight. In other cases, work on other mines was completed under orders from our sister agency, the Department of Toxic Substances Control. The discharger had also expressed doubt that there was any mercury waste on their property with the potential to discharge to Guadalupe Creek. The information I presented today clearly shows the potential for discharge of mercury from the Guadalupe mine to the creek. The discharger also asked to continue to be regulated under Water Code Section 13267 and their statewide industrial stormwater NPDES general permit. However, neither of these authorities allows the board to require cleanup. Not only is Section 13304, cleanup and abatement, the correct regulatory authority under the Water Code, but in the absence of direct contract oversight, Section 13304 is the most appropriate vehicle and provides the board with discretion in overseeing cleanup. Also, the revised order would give the discharger certainty regarding the path forward. We address the discharger's additional comments in our responses to comments, which is Appendix C of this item. We also met with the discharger on Monday, which meeting resulted in a few proposed changes to the revised tentative order that are non-substantive but provide clarification. Those are provided in the supplemental to today's item. In conclusion, this is another step forward in addressing mercury pollution, cleaning up mine sites across our region, and in implementing the Guadalupe River Watershed Mercury TMDL. I'll gladly take your questions.
Thank you. Any questions of the presenter?
I have a few questions.
Yes, sir. Board member.
Some of them are just sort of details, and then some of them are just what's happened before we got here. The Guadalupe mine is separately owned, although it's on the property of the rubbish company. Is that right?
A Guadalupe rubbish company owns about 411 acres, and so this is a portion of that acreage. Did I get your question? Did I answer that?
Well, but in the tentative order, describing the location, it says that because of separate ownership, it's maintained or it's retained a distinct name.
Yeah, that's in contrast to New Malmedon Mining District.
Okay, but
great.
So the discharger is one and the same.
Yes, that's the same. It's just that New Almaden and Guadalupe Mine are contiguous, and they're on the same ridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know a little bit more about the decision to use 13304 as the authority. And I guess comes out of the backdrop of the fact that, or I guess the comment, that discharger asked the question, why are we being singled out, and why aren't the reservoir entities also being included in the order? And the answer, one of the responses that's in the very fine work that you put together was, well, they're already under a voluntary compliance program, so it would be sort of duplicative for them to be under a 13304 order. Was that explored with the discharger, having them enter into a voluntary arrangement as opposed to under 13304? And if not, why not?
I think Diane might want to take this question, or would you like me to?
I think you're specifically asking in terms of the work that's happening at the reservoirs within the that are operated by the Santa Clara Valley Water District. And that is still, we would say, in the pilot phase and somewhat of a unique and different situation in which the reservoir operators are undertaking actions to oxygenate the lower waters to reduce the potential for methylmercury production. It's because it's pilot at this time and because of, I guess, various direction that we're considering in terms of their water rights permits. It's kind of a tricky area in terms of there's different ways to look at that from a regulatory perspective. It's similar to another reservoir that we have in the Walker Creek watershed where they're moving forward, doing the same type of thing. In that situation as well, we're first to look to water rights and consult with them about a regulatory structure as it relates to their water rights permits before we would move forward with our own type of order or permit. And so we're exploring that at this time as they're continuing to move ahead with this pilot work. Now, for us, it's very different than your more typical discharge of sediments into a creek as opposed to the production or the alteration of the chemistry of a reservoir in situ.
But my question isn't necessarily should the park entities be subject to a 13304 order. I guess my question is more when you have a discharger that there may be some questions around the margins, but has been cooperative and says it continues, it intends to continue to be cooperative. And one of the reasons for issuing a 13304 order is there are certain activities, namely implementation of the work plan that's going to be developed, that can't be done under the current authority. I guess my question is, has there been any effort to explore having them voluntarily agree to the obligations under this tentative order as opposed to just issuing the order?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at that. One is that from experience that we have moving forward in a cooperative manner, but not fully laying out all the steps that are involved and all the approval processes in a very specific manner has led in other situations to a discharger getting too far down the road and then getting surprised about our final expectations of where we need to go at the end. And so we do feel it's important to lay out this whole course in which they're going to embark on and have checkpoints all along the way, which is why we ask for these work plans. We review these work plans. They move forward. They implement the work. And so in many ways, it's to their advantage to have us buying in very officially, you know, as we move down that path. The second piece here, and this is more specific to when you have mining waste, is there are other regulations that do apply, and that relates to Title 27. And Title 27 gives the board flexibility in terms of making decisions in regard to where we can be more flexible in terms of applying different components of Title 27. So what we do in this situation in moving forward with the 13304 and approve all of these work plans is we can note places where we feel that we want to use our discretion in terms of not requiring official Title 27 requirements. And those come into play with things like how waste piles should be capped. Typically, Title 27 is used for regulating landfills, but it applies to having mining waste on site, how that's closed, how that's capped, and there are very prescriptive requirements in Title 27. We don't believe that those prescriptive requirements are warranted in this case and at many other mine sites, so our preferred approach has always been to use 13304 to clearly say and articulate why we don't believe that a liner is needed underneath the mining waste or a cap with a specific permeability may be needed on top of the mining waste. And so it's essentially our tool for moving forward and allowing that type of flexibility as opposed to what we would typically do within the waste discharge requirements arena. So,
But aren't those arguments that the discharger should then say that's why we want an order as opposed to that's why we don't want an order?
Well, that's what we discussed when we met with them earlier in the week, and I think they could maybe best articulate their concerns about moving forward with this type of order. But again, it's our experience that it's in the best interest of the discharger and works well for us to really have these orders lay out the direction that we need to go in terms of cleanup. And I don't know if Yuri wants to add anything to that.
I'll just add from a historical perspective, when you have voluntary cleanups, things, it can start off great, but things can go awry, and it wastes time when, things do go awry. We have to backtrack, issue a 13304 cleanup and abatement order. And so the preferred vehicle is usually always to issue a 13304 cleanup order to get cleanup done.
I have a
board member.
I have a question about the regulatory structure. Clearly, there's some confusion and some different assumptions among the discharger and the staff, and we'll leave that to the further testimony. But I want a little more clarity on the regulatory structure. We have adopted a TMDL after the hearing process that identified both no-regret actions and the beginnings of our effort with the available information of allocating waste loads. So was there a specific waste load allocation to this that comes out of that? And is there information that indicates that they're in compliance with that? Or is that one of the purposes that we need further investigation?
The TMDL established a load allocation to the upper watershed of 0.2 milligram per kilogram. That would be in accordance with San Francisco Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We did not... appropriate, and we were appropriate in this. We did not take that as a cleanup level for any of the sites. And we described how erosion control can achieve over 90% mercury load reduction.
So in terms of the allocation and the question of fairness, there is a standard that demonstrates our gradual improvement towards where the fish are safe to eat. And the ecological implications on higher trophic orders are acceptable. but it wasn't then sub-allocated, and the effort was clearly to do what we can with erosion control, which is substantially less than a formal closure of a landfill. But there's some clarity, at least in the staff's mind, that there may be more that would need to be done. And that wasn't then allocated so that there's inequity among the various dischargers from an erosion perspective.
That's correct. And, okay, in fact, the cleanup that the parks did,
so that may not have been clear to the discharger in terms of the communication.
It wouldn't. I agree. I don't think that it was completely clearly written. It was contained in the staff report. There was a description of the cleanup that had happened at county parks previously, but you can imagine that was in a very lengthy, you know, close on to a 1,000-page staff report. It might not have been the pages they turn to most frequently.
Thank you.
Thank you. So maybe now we'll hear from the discharger. I'd like to come forward. Council for Guadalupe Rubbish Disposal.
Good morning, Chairman Mueller, members.
Maybe bring that mic up, please.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Is that all right? Very good. Good morning, Chairman Mueller, members of the board. My name is Todd Maiden. I'm with the law firm of Reed Smith, and I'm here this morning representing Guadalupe Rubbish Disposal Company, who I will not refer to as the discharger, but rather as GRDC, or the landowner. And I am under oath. GRDC objected to the original tentative order in this matter, because we felt that a 13304 order is a regulatory tool whose time has not yet come. It isn't that we're at such diametric opposite positions with board staff on this matter. There have been several 13267 orders issued relative to the site, one in 2007, which was complied with and completed. Then there was a second phase, a 13267 order in 2009, and arguably our view is many of the, I'll say, line items or issues, things that are being requested today in a 13304 order, are still part and parcel ongoing things that should, and we believe will be addressed or could be addressed through the existing 13267 order. So this isn't we're saying no problem exists here. We simply are saying there's work being conducted. I do think the parties would be in agreement that to date there's been cooperation. And that this is ongoing work that GRDC is willing to perform additional investigatory work. But the 13304 is really more focused on abatement, and we're not quite there yet. Normally, you would want to define the lateral and vertical extent of contamination, get your arms around a problem, characterize the issue. That's really done through the 13267 process. When that's completed and the parties are in agreement about what the underlying facts are, then it's appropriate time to move on to a 13304 order. When the original tentative order was issued, again, we submitted, and I know the board has our lengthy comments. I will not lead you through all of them, simply to say there was three general thrusts of the arguments. One, we felt there was an insufficient legal basis for the order. We felt there was insufficient factual basis for the order. And we've talked a little bit already this morning about what we felt was maybe inconsistent treatment for similarly situated parties in the watershed. The staff took our comments and revised their order, tentative order. That came out a week ago Monday. We received the order Monday afternoon. As soon as we could, it was within 48 hours, we came in and had a face-to-face meeting with staff. Obviously, didn't have enough time to come up with a complete response to everything in the revised order. We felt it was a very productive meeting, to the extent that we think both parties are in agreement about the need for more investigatory work here and a desire to take additional actions that ultimately are preservative or protective of human health and the environment. And clearly, I think everyone was very sincere around the table for their desire to see this move forward. So great on the shared interest. I think there's still a difference on the timing of the 13304. If anything, the revised order, we feel, while well-intentioned, I mean, it's certainly there was an intent there to remedy some of our concerns about the initial order. That was done in a way, however, which in some ways our view has sort of expanded or made the revised order a little more ambiguous and therefore gives us a little more concern, actually. But nevertheless, I mean, we had good meetings. Subsequent to that all hands on deck meeting, GRDC's technical folks had continued interaction with their counterparts at the board. That ended up in the supplemental that just came out yesterday afternoon at 4:16. I received it. There were two revisions that we can note that were responsive to our comments. We greatly appreciate that responsiveness. There were some other things that were sought that were not approved. But and I guess another point was on the 13304, staff has said, well, you know, this is part of the whole cycle of the process, and that this will provide a clear path going forward. And I recognize that and value a 13304 at the appropriate time, that will provide definition, clarity, and certainty to a regulated party. My problem is it's not a clear path because we're still at a fork in the road, to use the analogy. I mean, until the mapping is complete, until the waste is characterized, there's some issues out there that we're not exactly sure which direction we're headed with. And we want to do that work. We think it can and should be done under a 13267. Member Kissinger, Mr. Kissinger raised the issue about has there been interaction with GRDC about willing to voluntarily move forward with that? And certainly if it's not clear, we are. We want to move forward. We're not here dragging our heels, but we are concerned that the breadth of the 13304 is such that it could empower staff to order some things that we think are simply not on the table yet. And so our hope and goal is to continue dialogue, continue working with staff, continue to work on things where we can characterize waste and do certain things. There are best management practices in place and want to continue or improve those if reasonable and necessary. If the board moves forward, and I say this not as any threat soever, it's more just sort of out of clear communication and wanting to be straightforward with everyone, GRDC would likely appeal the 13304 order, but appeal it in a manner where we would ask the State Water Board to hold it in abeyance. We're not trying to take this to the mat. We feel like there's still many opportunities. We have good working relationship with staff. There's in this Venn diagram, there's significant overlap, and we want to work within that significant overlap. But we would feel it necessary to preserve our rights so that if this revised order were issued in its form and because of certain ambiguities, it creates a potential risk for GRDC, and so we would want to preserve our right to call the question on that in the future if it came to that. Hopefully it wouldn't. So, again, I want to end on a positive note. These are parties that I think are working together. The other thing, just for the record, just to tidy it up. So in the presentation this morning, to the extent that staff presented you with photographs from 1883 and 1918, I would just hasten to say that is not representative of conditions at the site today. Those buildings are largely all gone. To the extent that there might have been some inference that staff was testifying that one of the photographs shows waste being transported downstream, I would argue that you cannot draw that inference from that photograph. In fact, we really don't know that what is in the a photograph from 1883, whether that is calcines or overburden or whatever. There were some photographs from 2008 and 2010. Certainly, this is all fair game. It's part of the administrative record and things that you need to review. But those photographs were not part of the tentative order, the revised order, staff's responses to our comments. We haven't seen them before, so would reserve our rights to comment on those in the future because we hadn't seen those before. I believe
we'll get you to conclude.
That wraps up my comments, and I appreciate your time and open to any questions.
Board Member Barrett.
I've followed this issue from the perspective of being a stakeholder on the South Bay Salt Ponds Forum, where the question of mercury contamination and what it represented to the as a barrier to responsible restoration of wetlands in the South Bay, and took a great interest in mercury and took an interest in directing research to make sure that we could act responsibly and pursue them. There's no question that wastes were transported downstream to where their methylation potential is high, and that the erosional processes are part of that. So I have no doubt in my mind that erosion of soils left on the site is a discharge that represent it. And I don't think it's of benefit arguing whether or not it's actually a discharge. It is, in fact, and there are methylation processes that go on downstream. But there is the other question of what can be accomplished through erosion control. That's kind of the first mechanism. In other words, what can we stabilize soils on site? You have done 10 projects. It's clearly not enough from the evidence before us. And I'm not willing to wait on those. Then there's the secondary question of what's happening in the stream morphologically, because there are deposits very near the stream. And I think that can be determined analytically. What's the stream's velocity in the area? What's its potential for erosion? And those are materials that probably cannot be stabilized and have to be removed. And then there's the third question of, are there calcines that don't that are not readily stabilized, that there may be a debate in the long term over removal. And of course, you guys are in the removal and capping business, so you know the technology pretty well, and you maybe even have some resources to bring to bear. I can see the value of a 13304 in beginning work immediately on those things which I think are no regrets actions and are stabilization, and that you've already undertaken them. So I think we're left with that, and I can see the importance of timeliness, where I'm not willing to let the discharger kind of spend a lot of time in study and arguing about study when stream morphological changes are eroding the sediment and increasing the discharge that we're concerned about. The third arena, I'm much more sympathetic to your concerns, where the lack of characterization, I think, goes to the very heart of the costs and the remedial strategies. And so when I looked through this initially and read your letter fairly carefully, I wondered, would the capacity to appeal in that specific arena really address – I mean, that's the biggest area where study needs to be done before determining appropriate remedies. I think in the morphological changes in erosion control, that's pretty well settled. and it needs to be done. And I think either a consent decree or 13304 is appropriate because it's not just investigation. It's work that needs to be done. So talk a little bit about how you would see perhaps a way to preserve your rights to not cede something on areas where there is a lot of work to be done in terms of characterization, and some others where, from at least one board member's perspective, I think we need a mandatory control that allows the staff to say, yes, this is clearly erosional, and you need to do best management practices beyond the 10.
Thank you. Any other board member comments at this time?
I have some more questions, but I'd like to hear what Mr. Mann has to say.
Okay.
Sure.
Did you want to respond?
It's a lot I'm thinking about. So appreciate your comments, and certainly we are in agreement that I think additional characterization would allow for to the extent that there are problems out there. Not willing to admit that on the record here at the moment, but the additional characterization would be useful and helpful to best determine what remedies are appropriate in the future. And until we finish that, that's our concern. It's very clear. I think there is a good record, and I apologize. I hadn't thought to bring it to go through, but to talk to you about the many erosion control or best management practices that are being implemented or are being done out there. So this isn't an issue of there's no BMPs going on or there's no – I mean, there's this whole 13267 process. There are BMPs at the site. There are stormwater discharge requirements that we're complying with, that sort of thing. And we're willing to continue with that. I mean, we think and even staff has said – that BMPs are a cost-effective, appropriate means of controlling this. We agree with them entirely. Where we are concerned is, and this was a distinction between the original order and the revised order, was in one of the points staff added in the revised order that additional remedial actions may be necessary, and they talked about excavation, stockpiling, on capping, covered waste management units, et cetera. But I think the emphasis here and the focus should be on the term may. It may be necessary. It may, and it may not. And all our point was that let's wait till the investigation, and rather than have this sort of open-ended area which could lead us in a lot of different directions, we'd like to continue working with them on the investigation, on the BMPs, on the erosion control measures, in that regard, before we take it to that next level. This sort of opens a door, and our concern is we don't know what's behind that door. Let's identify.
So Mr. Maiden, I think yes, sir. I agree with you on the question of removal and capping. That is a level of cost that remains to be determined, both in terms of how effective the best management practices can be and in the characterization of the materials. It has been done in some cases, and we will learn. I don't agree with you on the erosion control potential. That is an ongoing source. And I do think that we need a regulatory handle, not just an investigation handle. And I must say that stormwater best management practices is not what we're talking about. We're talking about preventing excessive erosion of mine tailings. And it is a different matter. And it is, in my view, very appropriate for 13304. So, you know, I guess this question could go to the staff as well. I don't want, for all the environmental reasons that you have with removing material and the carbon emissions and the erosion potential of doing that and you know, spending money on the wrong things, I don't want the board to give you authorization to mandate that without a return trip here or but I do want you to have the authority to mandate without returning to the board. This slope's too steep. This slope has materials in it that won't grow plants. This slope is adjacent to the stream in an eroding area. I don't want to slow down remediation of those areas, and I do think we need something more than a.
I was going to say, if I can respond to that, I do believe, and we've had some preliminary discussions last Wednesday afternoon on this very issue, and again, it goes back to Mr. Kissinger's comment. I do think there's room for agreement on some of these things, and my client, without going into the details of what we otherwise agreed on, were sort of confidential settlement communications. I think there was an olive branch offered that if we could come to agreement on some specific projects or issues, I think there's a willingness to do that. So I don't want to send the wrong message that we're not willing to do anything. I think there's opportunities, but it's just we got hit up with the revised order last Monday and did the best we could. You know, the 48-hour turnaround time, had the meeting. We hit another 48 hours later, we had our technical people meet with theirs. But that was a lot to process. Our view, staff, I think, viewed the revised order. I'll let them speak for themselves. But the message I got was that their view was the scope of the order was no different, that they were simply trying to clarify their original order. Our initial reaction was, wow, this gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of which direction this is headed than even the original order. And so that's why, you know, we still rely on our underlying comments. We think in some ways we might even have more, but we just didn't have the time to respond in kind. But we there is an ability and a willingness to work with staff on this to make advancements. We want to move forward. It's not at some point, you know, you don't want to pay the lawyers to argue these things. You want to make progress. But we have to preserve their rights because the revised order could lead in a lot of different directions, some of which are potentially onerous and we would think inappropriate, despite the very valid concerns about protecting the water.
Thank you. Vice Chair?
I feel like I'm in the slow learning group today because I'm a little perplexed about what your concerns are. The way I'm interpreting this is that it sounds like everyone might be in an agreement with task number one, doing task number one on a voluntary basis, and that's what you would like to keep doing under the 13267 umbrella. But it's when one gets to tasks two and three, which is figuring out what to do with the data and then what additional tasks, what additional on-the-ground actions are going to be required, that at that point, under this proposed order, the executive officer has the authority to approve the steps going forward. And what you want is to not come to the board until I'm getting screwed up with my sentence here. What you want to do is to have that point in time be the point in time when you come before this board and make your case about what to do and what not to do. Am I missing something?
Let me echo back what I think you heard. We do want to finish a reasonable investigation of the site. We think more actions can be taken and are willing to pursue those actions. We think when that investigation is complete would then be an appropriate time and the better time to discuss a 13304 order, because then the parties will have better information and an ability to craft an order that we don't think would be as ambiguous. We think the higher likelihood that parties might be in agreement on it, and so that again we're still kind of at the fork in the road. The 13304 provides a clear path, but there's two or three paths, or maybe more, that this could go down, and we don't know which one of those paths it is yet. So that's sort of where we're at. But again, want to emphasize underlying tone. I mean, this is a group that wants to work and wants to work with staff, does not want to, is not pretending that there isn't, you know, a problem in the Guadalupe watershed in general, to be determined what level of impact today is this site is impacting the watershed, if at all. That's what we still need to work on.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any other further comments? Board Member Kissinger?
A couple questions. So in your letter, commenting on the... Oh, sorry. In your letter on the proposed order, you talk about the unnecessary and additional administrative burdens that are imposed if the order is issued. Can you tell me what it is you're talking about there?
And I'm sorry.
You say... One of your objections to the order is that it... Let me find where it is. Got it a second ago. I'll come back to that.
I think in general, the 13304, I mean, we're in agreement with staff that Title 27 is probably not an appropriate remedy solution for this site. We're trying to follow their process in general. I'm not faulting them in any way. And it was, the meeting with them was very useful. I came away with a much better understanding of what they're trying to do, and I think it is heartfelt desire to assist this group and to provide closure. You want, as a property owner, for a variety of reasons, you eventually want closure to these issues. You want to know, okay, we're done. We just felt that at this juncture, let's finish the investigator. Let's finish step one before we get onto that, and then we're going to narrow the delta so that on the 13304 that that may well come later on down the line. But we're then going to be better agreement. Here's what we found. Here's where we found it. Here's what still needs to be done. We could easily, in the interim, come to some agreement. We're certainly open to discussing the was mentioned about if there's concerns about a bank or certain action items, early action items, we're open to discussing all those. We just don't think it's appropriate in the 13304 yet. The way it is written, it leaves it wide open as to what direction staff could go with this. And our understanding is the staff who's working on this today, the TMDL-focused staff, once this matter gets handed off, there'll be other staff members working on it in the future, and they could take this in a different direction. So that's all. I mean, we're it's out of abundance of precaution, but not out of a lack of desire to address the issue.
So I guess I'm looking at page 5 of your letter, and say GRDC opposes shifting to the more burdensome Section 13304 regulatory process, given the substantially similar work that may be accomplished using the same authorities that are currently in place. So. I'm wondering what you mean when you say the more.
Well, I think in general, an example might be under the 13304. So there's a very detailed work plan process that needs to be laid out. There's a lot of a lot of staff meetings and addressing of focusing on issues. We don't have the tools yet to go into the kind of 13304 work plan that is that I think staff ultimately wants here. That would be, an administrative burdensome process of trying to decide or we're trying to come up with a solution, but we haven't completed the definition of the problem. And that would be an inefficient way at this juncture to address it. That would be more administratively burdensome for us. We would rather finish definition of the problem, and then we think resolution will be easier to agree upon.
So
Do you think then the timetable that's set forth in the proposed order, or the timetables, the compliance dates, are unrealistic? I mean, for example, task one contemplates compliance in terms of a work plan to evaluate site sources as the end of this year. Is that unrealistic?
I apologize. I have not conferred with our technical staff on that particular deadline. I would be willing to say that, if there was a work plan on this, I think, 6 months or so, that's certainly a lot of time to have meetings and propose things, and so a lot of work. If you were going forward with the 13304 and you had to provide a work plan, it would certainly be a lot of time to come up with a work plan. Whether or not there's ultimately going to be an agreement on that work plan in light of the lack of definition of the underlying problem, I just don't know how successful that work plan will be, because I'm afraid the parties, there could be difference of opinions on that. But it is. But I would say, 6 months, certainly you just have meetings, you could draft things, you could have, that's certainly a lot of time. I will grant you that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay. Staff, would you like to make some brief comments in conclusion?
Sure. I feel like we're transported back to 1986 when the board first considered use of 13304 orders to pursue cleanup. These are issues that dischargers have brought up for the last 25 years, and the board has consistently found that they're not with merit. I think I'm hearing from Guadalupe's counsel that the paragraph at the end of finding 3 that says this order does not preclude the possibility that the water board may determine that the discharger must take additional mercury cleanup actions as necessary to protect water quality, that's a problem. Whether or not that's stated, I think the board always has that ability. That's, I think, not something that should be of concern. I think what we're really focusing on is the last part of finding 6, where it says the discharger has taken interim remedial actions to minimize the discharge of mining waste. We recognize that. These site cleanup requirements are necessary to clarify the cleanup process and schedule. In the future, revisions to these site cleanup requirements may be necessary to address mining waste in Guadalupe Creek and other surface waters. We recognize that 13304 orders may be needed to be revised moving forward, but I think we feel that the tasks that we've spelled out, consistent with what Board Member Young earlier commented in other areas, that we're being clear in what the expectations are, that we're providing a roadmap and putting it in the ball in Guadalupe's court to produce a work plan. The first task, work plan to evaluate sources of mercury, we state in there the purpose of the mercury sources evaluation work is to inform the work plan for stormwater best management practices. Again, it's in the ball is in the discharger's court to come up with an appropriate work plan to move forward. We've made some changes based on their recommendation to that are in the supplemental, where we have been much more specific that the task is to evaluate sources of mercury from mining waste rather than trying to be overly global, and included additional revisions that they requested in there, including in task B2, extending the work plan. Really what this order does is focus the discharger on addressing, completing the work plan in task 1, submitting revised work plan, and then setting out the schedule for implementation and ultimately completing that. It's, as I say, the ball's in their court to come up with the work plan, and we will work with them on that. Nothing in here says that we're going to change course without opportunity for public comment, public input. It's based on what they submit and how we move forward from there. So based on that, I would recommend adoption of the revised tentative order with the changes we've proposed in the supplemental that you have before you. The wording changes to task B1 and the extension of the compliance date in task B2.
Member McGrath.
Bruce, it seems to me that some of this is very straightforward, and there are other discretionary points that are fairly clearly identified. I mean, there's a characterization of calcine wastes and percentage of calcine wastes in the various areas. And that is necessary to inform the question of would capping or removal be necessary. That's pretty straightforward. And there's another area in 2A where it talks about if needed to control discharges of mercury from ponds, and that depends on the geochemistry and the biochemistry of what's happening in the pond bottom and how much of a big deal it is. So assuming that we adopt this, and at the end of the day, the discharger believes that the staff is asking for something that's not cost-effective or not within the appropriate discretion, would they have the ability to appeal the staff's conclusions on this to the board and bring it back to us on the questions of capping, on the questions of modification of the ponds? Would that still be a possibility for them?
Yeah, definitely, because I think all of this would go to implementation of the revised work plan. And we've historically tried to, again, be clear on the complete process, recognizing that moving forward there may be need to make revisions. And so certainly the devil's in the details of what is in the work plan, what's recommended to be implemented, and if there's a difference of opinion, we do try to resolve that in a public forum.
Well, certainly I see more of the staff's work than some of the dischargers do, and I know your track record of reasonable. So I'm going to move this as is, and I'm going to make a couple of points. First, I don't see anything that is administratively more awkward with this. The requirements in task B1 in B1 for a work plan are and should be identical to what would be required on 13267. The question is implementation and in the speed of implementation. And for erosion control, both from the hill slopes and from the stream processes, I'm just not willing to accept delay for what is clearly needed now. I think we need to, on the longer term, I think there are open questions on what needs to be capped. But I think the staff has also been reasonable here in saying, essentially, we may be able to solve 90% of the problem without dealing with capping, and we're not going to be in the liner arena. And I've done liners. I've done caps. I've been in a situation where we spent more in investigations trying to avoid caps than we spend on the cap. So I think it's reasonable, and I was a little frustrated in wondering if there might be a possibility of narrowing the bounds with a month, but I didn't get enough clear sense of what is objectionable in the order other than time pressure. I do believe that the ability to appeal and have the board oversight of whether or not the staff has been reasonable on those things beyond what's clearly needed now. But clearly there are some things that are needed to be done now, and that's why we need a 13304. So I move the staff recommendation.
It's been moved.
I second.
And discussion, please.
I think Jim answered my concerns. I mean, the crux of the argument seems to be that the discharger is concerned that the next phase of implementation is going to entail something that they think is unreasonable. And I think we just heard that if at that point the discharger thinks that the whole staff has gone nuts as bunnies, they can bring it back to the board and we can look at it then. So I understand their concerns, but I also, like Jim, have seen a long track record of very similar types of compliance packages that work out a lot better than the dischargers think they're going to. So I have a comfort level with this that I understand that you might not share, but I that's where I'm at.
Continued discussion?
So all I would add, I join the comments that were made. What I would add is I am somewhat torn by this. I think it's always you want to encourage a party that's cooperative, and there's not everything that I've seen suggests that folks have worked very closely with the board staff, and that's to be commended. And I appreciate from representing my own clients that getting an order with the force of law is not a welcome item. And so it's really why I asked the questions about whether or not there's a means by which this could be negotiated and avoid an order. But I also think that what's been put together here are very reasonable, lengthy time frames to get the work done. And so the question is purely whether there's a benefit that comes from clarity about exactly how this is going to be done, so there aren't any misunderstandings later based on what might be confidential settlement communications, which aren't really subject to open airing. So I struggled with this one, I admit, but I think in the end I joined the comments that we had.
Board Member Colby.
So I do support the motion. I appreciate the concerns, but from hearing what the discussion, it seemed like it was really based on what happens after one, and it sounds like I'm new, but our staff seems is willing to work with the discharger, and it sounds like that's the record of our staff, and there is opportunity for that collaboration, and if needed, to bring it back to us. So given that, I think I read this, and it looked like it's actually might be helpful to move this along and, have some clarity. So I do support the motion, and we'll vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, just a brief comment. It seems like today we are trying to clean up history with our next item and this item, and that's always hard to do. And we really are asked to serve in this capacity to try to do what's best for the future of the environment of the Bay Area. Simple as that. It's always unfortunate when firms and individuals end up having property that they did not cause this problem, that they're going to have to work towards cleaning it up. And I think that's a huge challenge. And these are things when you buy a big hole in the canyon up in the hill, you think, boy, I got the right spot, and then all of a sudden it bites you into wherever. And so I think it's a beginning. And again, in my experience, how do we move forward in a balanced approach? We are here judging the information from our staff and professionals and legal team and from the discharger. But in the end, we have to make a decision what's best to clean up the environment. And I know it's not an easy decision that we have to make, and it's definitely not an easy, inexpensive decision companies have to make. But it's something we have to move forward on. So at this time, I'll call for a roll call vote, please. Roll call vote, please.
Board Member Abe-Kobe?
Aye.
Board Member Kissinger?
Aye.
Board Member McGrath?
Aye.
Vice Chair Young?
Aye.
Chair Mueller?
Aye. And I want you to understand we've given almost an hour to this item, and I think we've given it a fair hearing, and I thank everybody for involved, and I thank the patience for the next item on the agenda. But I do believe we have to take a very quick 5-minute break. And so we'll come right back to the next item. Thank you for your patience. We need a break. Here you go.
Oh,
no,
thank you. I was
going
to try to.
No, no. Don't. No, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes here. Just be safe.
Josh is out.
He is.
Oh, they're way out here?
Yeah, way out here.
Well, there was some
okay.
Oh, hi.